This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 20th, 2009, and you're listening to the best, the only PokerCast worth listening to. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Wow, you played our hand strong there, buddy.
Hey, man, I got top set with no draws and a rainbow board. I'm going with it, so.
But you're bluffing to that inside straight. So.
Hey, you know, it was the first week without the World Series, and you know how me, I'm jonesing like Cookie Monster in rehab with a spoon and soft cookie dough and a lighter. So, you know how I always have to have my TV fixed, and this week, man, it really came up for me. Joe Catta was on Letterman, the world champion of the World Series. I watched that, and it was pretty boring. But of course, Letterman brought up the whole isn't it like if you win a big pot, they take you outside and try to kill you, you know? So I was like, all right, another stereotype for poker, you know. And Joe did his best to try to make sure he understood it was skill, but the thing I really wanted to bring up today was Poker Tonight debuted Wednesday on Fox Sportsnet.
All right.
And that's our buddy Joe Sebok and Scott Huff. They're hosting their own, weekly news show on poker now.
Wow.
And you can catch it a couple of times during the week, so it's not like...
Of course, it's Fox Sports. It always gets repeated, 19 times.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about it if you didn't catch the first episode. But I just have to wonder, if they're going to have enough news every week, I mean, I guess they are. I just hope they don't turn into, the circuit for TV, where it's only when they're at the World Poker Tour. It's going to... It's... I don't know. It was an interesting show. Joe did the Jay Leno does that jaywalking thing. And
yeah.
Joe went on the street and did something during it for a segment. And it had Lon McCarron, our good friend Lon McCarron, on there. And I tell you, Scott, the thing I got most out of the show was that you and I just live on the wrong coast.
That's true. It is true.
I mean, we would be doing this. We would be. Yeah, I know. We would be doing this kind of stuff if we were out there, though. I know we would. And, but hey, we're making it work where we are. And, so last night, it's on, and so I'm recording it, so I didn't want to watch it while it was recording, so I'm flicking through channels, and Lifetime is showing Lucky You.
Excellent. A poker classic.
No, I can't remember. Did you see that? I can't remember if you actually saw it.
Is that the one with Eric Bana?
Yeah.
I saw pieces of it. Enough of it that I'm scarred for life.
Well, just real quick, because we have a very exciting show today, and I don't want to take too much away from it, but... I can't believe I didn't talk about this when I reviewed it the last time. I gave it some thumbs down, I remember. I said it was pretty cool seeing all the pros and whatever. But, the final hand that this guy plays against his dad, the final table of the World Series, I didn't even bring this up, and I can't believe I didn't. He has pocket aces, his dad has pocket kings at the end of the hand, his dad shows pocket kings, and the kid mucks the pocket aces and gets knocked out of the tournament. Now, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's the collusion. Well, they'll stop you from doing it. You have to show your last hand if you get knocked out.
I don't know. I've discussed this with my friends at the Movie and Television Poker Tournament Directors Association, and they have confirmed that you're able to do anything you want to in a TV show or movie. You are wrong.
I thought it would be detrimental to poker. It's yet another thing showing someone colluding to help his dad win a tournament, and that's not right. And then they even talk about it at the end of the movie. They're like, did you throw that hand? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you threw the hand. Now you're making poker players look like scumbags. And this is, you know, this is with all of the big name poker name pros in the movie. It just re-ticked me off. Is that a word?
Re-ticked me off. It is now. Put it on a t-shirt.
Oh, man. So you know what? If they can't do TV right, then we're going to do TV right.
Gosh, dag darn it, you're right.
This is awesome. You and I are going to be on TV.
That's right, buddy. You know, our good friend Kirk up at the Windy City Poker Championship, a very, very successful poker show up in the Chicago area. He and his co-host, our good buddy Chicago Jason Finn, they want to play in this next big event.
They need someone to step in.
They need they're making the Metro PCS call to the bullpen, and bringing us all the way up to the Windy City, Chicago, Illinois, for the December 18th, 19th event of the Windy City Poker Championship, and we'll get a little FaceTime, try not to break too many TVs out there. And hopefully, you know, we'll be analyzing those two guys at the final table.
That's going to be exciting, man. I've always thought that you and I were like Lon McCarron and Norman Chad 2.0. So now we're going to have a chance to prove it, and I'm looking forward to it, really looking forward to it. And I've never seen Chicago either. You know, I've stopped at one of the airports there in a connecting flight, but never seen outside the airport. So very excited, and December 18th to the 19th, man. Set your calendars, mark, save the date, whatever you got to do, get there.
Yep, it will be at the Irish American Heritage Center, and you can get all the events on that, including you can go and buy in at www.maineventcharitygames.com. Tournament buy-in is $370, get you 25,000 clams, Chris.
Awesome.
Very deep stack. And then our good friend Chicago Joe didn't want us to come up there without making my head a little bit bigger. So on that Saturday at 5 p.m. will be the second Scott Long Poker Classic, an $85 buy-in that even you and I can afford to play in.
Well, the company will pay for that, baby.
So we have a, you know, it's a good weekend of poker up in Chicago. So, you know, we have a lot of friends and fans up there. So come out and see us December 18th, 19th. And then that show will be airing, obviously, not just in the Chicago area, but now it's being rebroadcast down here in the great state of Florida. And I just got a text last night from Kirk. That it's going to be debuting in Louisiana and Texas and that kind of area, too. So
awesome.
We're going to get on lots of TVs, buddy.
Well, from TV to TJ.
Yes.
This is awesome, man. We just found out today that Deep Stacks University is going to be the presenting sponsor of the Annie Up Poker Cruise. And Deep Stacks instructor TJ Cloutier will be sailing with us.
Woohoo! TJ!
TJ, man, he's a six-time bracelet winner, and he's going to teach a four-hour mini course on our ship for an additional $199. And that price is great because it also includes an activation and 1 month free at the DeepStacks online training program. Anybody who's seen this DeepStacks thing, like even when we saw it at the expo, it's unlike any other training we've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like intuitive, and it's got video, and it's really remarkable.
It's really, really cool, and you know, we've always loved TJ.
Yeah.
And so it would be great to have him sailing on the cruise with us and hanging out with, playing in our poker room, and of course the course will be great. I mean, that's a great price for instruction from a six-time World Series bracelet winner. I mean, think about it. They pay, our listeners pay us nothing.
Yeah.
And we have zero World Series bracelets. So.
And they get nothing. So,
yeah. So six times zero is well more than $199. So, all right. So, but that's on top of the normal cruise, which is $479 per person, double occupancy. And we'll just remind you of all the details. It is sailing on the Royal Caribbean Grandeur of the Seas, March 25th to 29th, out of the great city here of Tampa. We will be stopping in Cozumel to parasail and do some other crazy stuff. And you can get all the information at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. And if you want to book, call our travel agent, Mary Kolb, 727-733-3498. That's 727-733-3498. And you'll have to give us a week or so to get everything set up as far as booking the TJ package if you want to do that as well, too. But we'll be able to do that straight through Mary as well, too.
You know, can you tell I'm excited? I mean, everything is so exciting today. And one of the reasons is because, you know, a long time ago we started – you know, thinking about what could we do for the Badoogie show. And we happen to run into Greg Raymer, and he's going to be on the show today. He's in the green room. He's playing Chinese poker with Joe Seabock, taking him for $1,000 a point. But I'm so excited that he's on the show today, and the reason why is because Badoogie, our event 11, is December 9th, but the free roll is on Wednesday, and that's the first time any of the Ante Up Nation has played Badoogie together on Stars, so we're pretty excited.
Absolutely. I love Badoogie. I really do.
Yeah, and you know, we got to teach everybody real quick right now how to play it, because I think that Raymer's going to want to just give us some strategy. He's not going to want to go over that, you know, like that stuff, they boilerplate stuff they put on, you know, the old poker shows where here's how you play Hold'em. So
yeah, I mean, he's a world champ. We're not gonna, you know, belittle him by making him teach us the game.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, it is a triple draw game, which means you get three chances to make your hand, and the best hand that you can make in Badoogie is four different suits, and it has to be the lowest hand possible, where ace is always low. So ace, deuce, 3-4 of four different suits is the best hand you can make.
Yep, but don't worry about that little straight, even though it's four cards. It does not matter.
Exactly.
Just the four lowest cards. And if you have two suits in your hand, then you have what's called a three-card Badoogie, and that would be the tiebreaker. So if somebody's got a four-card Badoogie, they beat your three-card Badoogie. But if both of you have a three-card Badoogie, then you go based on the highest card.
And, of course, also pairs are included in that. If you have a pair to one of your cards, then you also only have a three-card Badoogie. So you have to have all different suits, all different ranks. And if you don't, then you make your three best different suits and three different ranks. And if you don't have that, fold. Because you're screwed. So, I mean, that's basically it. And you'll learn the betting as you go on the site. But the first draw is always half the bet of the second and third draw. So, you know, it depends on the tournament structure. But that's basically how it goes. And it's a lot of fun. And it's very frustrating. I think it's more frustrating than any other game. But since I have Greg teaching us today, I think maybe I'll learn to you know, calm that frustration down a little bit and enjoy the game better.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've ever played before, we have just the thing for you. Listen to Greg later on today. Learn all about it. You got some time to study. Wednesday night, free. No charge. Totally free. Our Ante-Up free roll. You can win, one of 18 seats in our Badoogie event, which will be December 9th. 9 p.m. on PokerStars. The free roll is Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on PokerStars. Password is Ante Up. And I'll be interested to see how the Brazilian contingent does without Greg Raymer's tips.
Well, actually, we're going to ask Raymer later to do it in Portuguese. So.
Oh, excellent. Very good. You know, he could probably do that, too. He's a smart guy.
I know. All right, so let's see what you got piled up on the Ante Up news desk.
Yeah, big, big, big week, Chris.
Yes.
All right, let's start off with Jeffrey Pollock, who has been the commissioner of the World Series of Poker since 2005, overseeing the tournament series' expansive growth, abruptly resigned just days after Joe Cotto won this year's event. Pollock says he had accomplished all the goals he had for the series and hasn't decided what's next for him yet. The World Series has no immediate plans to replace Pollock.
Sad day.
Kind of shocking.
Yeah, it is shocking, and the timing was terrible, too. And I'm sure more will come out of this later as why it happened that way, but I have an item. Patrick Antonius this week won what Gambling Online magazine described as the largest online poker pot in history, dragging down a pot worth $878,958 in a Pot Limit Omaha heads-up match against a player known as Isildur One. Thank you for giving me a pronunciation
there.
I have no idea how to say it, so.
Yeah, I guess this guy is making a name for himself, and of course it's easy to make your name for yourself when you lose just shy of $1 million, which is about a monthly revenue for Ante Up.
Yeah,
so, you know, we're not really impressed with Patrick, but you know, keep plugging away there, Patrick. You'll make it someday.
Oh,
all right, and then finally, Greg Sessler won the ladies event, and Greg is, yes, indeed, a guy. Greg won the ladies event of the World Series of Poker circuit event at Harvey's Lake Tahoe. Taking home $9,932. Sessler is one of four men to enter the event, and he said he did so because he is only in town one day and he liked the structure.
Yeah, you know, this guy and Eric Bana are just not good for poker. You know what I'm saying? I think you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
All right, so let's listen to our hotline clip. Phone number is 813-448-1120. This comes from Brian from Why Mama, Florida.
He's back.
He's back, and he's talking about taking a break.
Hello, Annie Up. This is Brian Rutherford of Waimama, Florida. Just calling up with a bit of good news and some strategy advice. After suffering some sick beats, I know you guys don't want to hear about that, I took a 2-week break from poker, came back to the tables rested, refreshed, and actually posted my biggest winning session ever. Took $100 and turned it into $1,400 over the course of 12 hours at the Hard Rock. A couple of things that I got out of that. Number one, if you're playing at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, play from midnight until noon. You get the drunkest, fishiest players you've ever seen in your entire life. They will literally just hand you your money. Number two, if you're feeling kind of down on the game, there's nothing wrong with taking a break. I know that's why I enjoyed my great successes on last Tuesday. So, thanks for hosting the show, and I will talk to you guys later.
See? Taking a break really does work.
Yeah, that and having the ability to play poker from midnight to noon at the Hard Rock with a bunch of drunk guys.
Yeah, that's true. That will certainly turn your game around real quick as long as you're laying off the paps. All right, Brian, we appreciate the call, and we will reward you with a $10 online poker staking package from our good friends at getastake.com. And call the hotline and or email us at podcast@indianmagazine.com, and you too can win some great swag like we give away in the mailbag.
Yes, the mailbag. This one comes from Denver, Colorado, a man by the name of Ryan Gibbs. And he says he considers himself a pretty good poker player, and he's trying to learn as much as he can about the game, playing as much as he can, reading books, magazines, and obviously listening to some fantastic poker casts, us, of course. He says, the people I play with in the home games are pretty good, but a few of them tell me I am too tight and I don't win enough because, he doesn't know what he's doing with the cards, blah, blah, blah. And he's trying to change up his game a bit so that he can switch gears and not be so predictable to his friends. Does he have any advice?
I do.
Good. What
I
is
actually
it?
Have advice today, Chris.
All right.
Because this was me. I was Ryan Gibbs, except I never lived in Denver because it's cold there. It snows and stuff. A lot. They have, like, mountains out there. But, you know, I used to play tight, you know, and I still probably play too tight. But this is what I suggested to Ryan, is that you've got to kind of force yourself to loosen up a little bit. You don't want to loosen up recklessly, like just, hey, I'm going to play this crazy hand this time. So what I suggest is that he starts playing suited connectors. And in any position, just be careful how he does it. But that will help randomize his game a little bit. And it has the added bonus of being hands that can flop big, and he can take some stacks.
You want to hear my? You want to hear my advice?
Yes.
My advice number one is to listen to you.
Oh wow!
Because that was good advice. And the other thing is, I have a friend back home in Connecticut who once told me he has a way of dodging Murphy's Law, and his way was when he was about to reach for, like, you know, the can of tomatoes on the on the shelf or whatever, he would reach behind it and grab the one behind it, like trying to, you know, change up fate, that kind of thing.
Okay,
so
very nice.
What I'm saying now to Ryan is look at your cards and say, how would I play this hand normally? And then do the exact opposite, kind of like George on Seinfeld. Do the opposite.
Yes, bizarro poker.
Exactly. So in other words, I got pocket aces. Normally I would raise with them here under the gun. Okay, well, how about I don't? How about I limp with them and see if someone else raises? Because I normally would limp with suited connectors, and they know that's what I do. Or a suited ace, or something like that. That's maybe not the greatest example, but look at your cards and go, okay, oh, I want to raise. No, wait a minute. Is that what I normally would do? If I normally would do that with this hand, let me do something different. And that's another way to do it. So how to be, you know, unpredictable.
Sounds wonderful. Very
now,
good.
Now, predictably, we have to give him something from the swag shelf.
Our normal tight aggressive swag giveaway here. Ryan, we will send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. That'll show you exactly what cards to play. And then if you use our advice, you will just do the exact opposite. How's that?
Okay, let's go to our one-minute mystery, which returns this week for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the ride-along with Columbo, and but I think we're ready for the one-minute mystery old-school version.
Yeah, yeah, I miss the music, so cue the music.
Wow. Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The case of the short stack shaman. After being above average for most of a multi-table tournament, I suddenly find myself folding for an entire level and I am now under average just as we approach the money bubble. I just got to this table, but I just played a hand where I raised in mid-position with King 10 on a steal and got two callers. The button bet on a 8-6-3 rainbow board, and I ended up check-folding my King 10 steal.
But you knew that someone might find out, so you had to cover your tracks.
I have just 9K in chips where the average is 16K, and there are 99 players left before the bubble breaks. We are at the 250-500 level, and the antes have started. Under the gun plus one fold. Mid-position player with 21.5K, min raises to 1,000. I'm directly on his left and look down at ace of hearts, 10 of hearts. Action?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
A couple of years ago, when we had 2004 world champion Greg Raymer on our show, the interview wandered briefly into triple draw games, including Badoogie.
That was great, Chris. Remember that?
I remember, and we were just so fascinated by what Greg had to say. And when the show was over, we secretly wished that someday we could have him on for like a tutorial show on Badoogie. And you know what? Today our wish comes true. Greg, thanks for returning to Ante Up.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys. Glad to do it.
Now, before we get into the Badoogie portion of the show, I'd really like to catch up with you. You know, you've always been one of the greatest advocates of the PPA, and you know, you've been to Washington in support of regulating online poker, that kind of stuff. How do you feel things are progressing in that area?
You know, it's really hard to judge the progress of Congress. I mean, you know, you think you're doing good and sometimes you're not. And then sometimes you feel like you're treading water and all of a sudden, boom, your bill passes, you know, unexpectedly.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to track these guys because, you know, you meet with them individually and they all nod their head and agree with you. And you get the feeling that they, I mean, if you were telling them like, you know, yes, you know, we should make worshiping Satan the official religion of the United States. They'll nod their head. Yes. And I hope to see you at the polls next month. You know, and they're never going to do it, but they make you think they are. So you'll vote for them.
You know, Barney Frank introduced his bill this year. Senator Menendez followed up, and then the whole thing kind of got derailed with the healthcare thing going on now. Do you are you less optimistic now than you were perhaps earlier this year?
Well, just because we're running out of time in the year. I mean, if you had asked me at the beginning of the year, I would have said for sure we're going to get a bill passed this year in 2009, and obviously that's, you know, less and less likely every single day.
Have you been following what's been going down here in Florida as well? Have you been hearing about things that are progressing in our legislature as well?
I don't keep up with the exact details, but I certainly know you have this strange negotiation going on that's including the, you know, the governor and the Indian casinos and the racinos and the other people who are involved in any form of gambling in the state, and they're all trying to figure out who gets what, cutting up the pie.
There's also, they had this, they passed this thing where they wanted to have a look at exactly what was going to happen with online poker and how maybe we could benefit from regulating it in our state. So are you aware of any other states trying to pursue regulating it at their own in their own state and seeing what happens from there?
Probably close to 4 years ago, I went to North Dakota and they were looking at it. They had some people in that state that were trying to advocate that they should set up a state system, you know, for national play and regulate it and tax it. And I mean, at one point in time, I think some of the online sites were thinking, hey, there's a good chance we're all moving to North Dakota. But Department of Justice scared the state Senate and they voted down the bill after the House had voted for it. And I haven't heard anything since. So apparently that's a dead issue and has been for several years. But I think it's, you know, a great idea if one state can be first.
Yeah.
and they can get it so that it's legalized in their state, and then make the argument that, you know, because things that are legal in one, it's kind of like, you know, this issue with the, you know, the gay marriage. You know, some people who are against it are upset when they legalize gay marriage, you know, in Vermont or something of that sort, because they're afraid that, you know, their state has to give full faith and credit to the acts of Vermont.
Yeah.
And that, therefore, if the couple gets married in Vermont, they're legally a couple in Vermont, well, then you have to treat them as legally a couple when they move, you know, to Texas or Arizona or California or wherever it may be. And there's some truth to that. You know, you can't just deny the validity of another state's laws on some of these issues. So if Florida or any other state just jumped up and said, okay, online poker is legal, we're going to tax it, regulate it, then other states might have to permit their residents to play on those Florida-regulated sites.
Hmm, very interesting. Now, Greg, you've been a very visible champion and continue to have tremendous success on the playing circuit. What else is going on in your life now, and any projects coming up you want to talk about?
Oh, there's always things happening, of course. You know, still representing Poker Stars, and, you know, we're working on getting a North American poker tour started. I mean, we've already got European Poker Tour, Latin American, Asia Pacific, Australia, New Zealand, Russian, Italian. And so now we're working on the actual North American Poker Tour.
Wow.
And I think we'll have some events in Canada as soon as that can be arranged. And then as soon as we think that it's you know, possible to do so, we're going to have events in the U.S.
Wow, that's great.
Very good. Very good.
Now, our show hosts a monthly tournament series on Poker Stars. And this month's game, no shock, is Badoogie. But it's been 2.5 years since you actually gave us that crash course on the game. Can you give our listeners sort of a refresher on how to play the game before we sort of dive into the tips and strategy?
Sure. A critical part of Badoogie, like any game of poker, is starting hand selection. And basically, there's, you know, only three hands you should be playing for the most part. Every time you have a pat hand. So if you're dealt initially a Badoogie, even if it's King, Queen, Jack, 10, then that hand is almost always going to be played. Now, there are times I've just thrown away a pat Badoogie without putting a single dollar in the pot. Because if it goes, you know, raise, re-raise, call, you know, there's going to be three or four players, and I have a Badoogie of that sort. I have a king high, queen high, jack high Badoogie. Well, when I'm facing that many opponents, it becomes highly, highly likely that one or more of them is going to make a better Badoogie. And therefore, you know, I would not play the pat Badoogie. But if I had something like, you know, ace, deuce, three, king, well, then I would play it because that fits the next criteria, which is, you know, an excellent three-card hand. So if you have three extremely low cards and you need to draw a fourth to make your Badoogie, that's a hand that's pretty much always going to be played. And then finally, in some circumstances, you can play two-card draws, especially when you're defending your big blind and especially when you're the first one opening the pot in late position. But whenever you have a two-card draw, it should pretty much always be two wheel cards. So by that I mean two cards, ace, deuce, three, four, maybe a five.
Okay. I do remember back when you were on the show the last time and talking about it, you had brought up comparing it to deuce to seven triple draw, and in that you were saying that if someone had a one-card draw to an eight versus a two-card draw to a seven, the one-card draw to an eight and deuce to seven was a favorite. But in Badoogie, if you had a two-card draw with ace-deuce versus someone who had a three-card draw to a Badoogie, the ace-deuce is probably the favorite. Is that still hold true?
Well, yeah, like if you start off with something like five, six, seven, uh-huh, drawing one card, and I start off with ace-deuce, then, you know, I mean, whichever one of us has position is probably a little bit favorite in the money. But in terms of just, you know, showdown value, in other words, if we're both going to draw until we make a Badoogie, or, you know, draw three times if we don't make a Badoogie, and then see who has the best hand, the ace-deuce is a huge favorite.
Okay.
Because the ace-deuce can immediately catch any three, four, five, six, seven in those two suits and take the lead. So that's 10 cards that the ace-deuce can catch to take the lead over. And he gets three chances to do that. And, of course, you know, he's slightly less likely to make a Badoogie than the 5-6-7 is because he has to hit two cards instead of one. But he doesn't have to make a Badoogie to win the hand. He just has to improve while the 7-6-5 does not improve. So to be honest, I don't know the math of that one to know exactly, you know, how much of a favorite one hand is over the other. But, you know, off the top of my head, I would, you know, if you were proposing some kind of, you know, prop betting with me here, I would definitely choose the ace deuce.
Okay.
Greg, one of the things that I think people have problems with when we first learn Badoogie is they're trying to draw to a very low, a very good, very strong Badoogie, but there's value in having a four-card Badoogie if you've got other players still drawing, is there not?
Well, if we just take a hypothetical of you have a Pat Badoogie, and it's a bad one. So your opponent is drawing one card, and he can beat you with any of the, you know, he needs a spade, let's say. So he's got 10 cards to hit. You know, if he has ace-deuce-3, or if he has, you know, whatever, if he has, you know, ace-deuce-queen. But let's say you have King, Queen, Jack, 10 Badoogie made, and he's drawing where he can hit any of those 10 spades to beat you. Well, if he gets to draw three times, then he is going to beat you just over half the time. So Badoogie has that going for it, which is kind of like Hold'em.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were playing No Limit Badoogie, then that would be one of the interesting things about the game, is that two of the commonly played hands are, you know, virtual coin flip. Of course, the truth is, though, if we improve your Pat Badoogie, you know, now instead of your Pat Badoogie being King Queen or whatever, something where I can beat you by making any one of my 10 spades, if we just put you to where you're like a 10 Badoogie, well, now, of course, that changes the math dramatically, because now I can only beat you with 7 cards instead of 10. So instead of beating you half the time, now I'm only beating you like a third of the time.
Is the 10 the threshold where you're a favorite against any hand drawing? You know, like how they say the jack is the favorite in deuce to 7 on the final draw against someone drawing. Is the 10 the threshold, or is there another card that you try to get to?
Well, if it's only one draw left, then you're a favorite with any Badoogie against someone who's drawing.
Okay.
You're a significant favorite because he has 10 cards once at most.
Okay.
And of course, if your hand is better than a King, Queen, Badoogie, then, you know, he might have less than 10 cards. So, you know, since he has, depending upon how many cards he's drawn up to this point, you know, he has anywhere from, you know, like 45 or fewer cards that he hasn't seen. So he can hit only maybe 10 of those. But, of course, this is a limit game, so he's always getting a great, great price.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, if you're playing No Limit Badoogie, that would be very different. You know, you'd be pricing the guy out all the time early in the hand. In fact, No Limit Badoogie would probably be a horrible game because, for the most part, people would just like, oh, I've got a rough made Badoogie. I'm just going to shove in.
Yeah.
And I'll take down what's out there unless I'm unlucky enough to run into a better pat hand.
Right. Now, Greg, Badoogie is another one of those games like Deuce to Seven where no cards are exposed. And so that's an interesting transition from most of our listeners that play Hold'em or Stud or game or cards are exposed. What kind of tips can you give folks in a game where the cards aren't exposed?
Well, you know, in a sense, you know, I'm going to mention a third game that I really like, Single Draw Deuce to Seven.
Yeah.
And I consider, and that game, of course, is almost always played No Limit. I've never seen it any other way than No Limit. And that is almost pure poker. When you play Single Draw, No Limit, Deuce to Seven, you don't get to see the cards, and the game is pretty much entirely about, you know, does he have it or does he not? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the question you're always asking about your opponent. Now, you might, you know, make a hand that's so good, that's so strong, that you don't, the only reason you care whether the other guy has it is because you're hoping he'll pay you off. So you actually hope he has a hand, so he, you know, I got the pat number one, I hope he has pat number two or three, because then he'll for sure pay me off all of his chips. But, you know, other than that, you know, it's really looking the guy and is he bluffing or is he not. And there is actually a lot more bluffing in that game than there is in No Limit Hold'em. And there should be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, because typically in that game, it's one guy stands pat and one guy draws one card. And the other, well, another common hand is both players draw one card. It's pretty much never right to draw more than one. Occasionally, but not often. And so, you know, you stand pat, then I draw one card, and you have a 10 low. You just have to look at me and, you know, it's like if you bet it, it's hugely wrong for you to bet that hand. Because I'm basically, if I miss my draw, I'm going to fold, and if I made my draw, I've got you beat.
Right.
So you're going to pretty much always check. And then if I bet, you just have to figure out, is Greg bluffing? It's like, I check, so he knows I have something like that. I have a jack low, a 10 low, maybe a bad 9 low. So is he betting because he thinks I won't call, or is he betting because he hit his draw? And, you know, it's just a question of knowing the player. There is no mathematically correct thing to do here because, you know, the only thing you could use math for per se is, you know, what price is this guy giving me with his bet, and therefore how often do I have to be correct for my call to be correct? How often do I have to win for a call to be correct? And I'll use that when I'm judging whether he's bluffing or not. But, you know, whether he's bluffing or not is not at all a mathematical decision. The only way you could make it a math decision there is if just, okay, I've played 50,000 hands against this guy, and in this spot or spots like this, he's been bluffing this percentage of the time. But except for that kind of historical betting pattern thing, there is no math to the final decision. It's look the guy over and figure him out. Now, Badoogie isn't as extreme because it's not No Limit, but still there's a lot of that going on, and there's, you know, times that you could just do something. And, you know, sometimes, like, I'm sure you're drawing smoother than me. I'm sure that you have something like Ace Deuce 3 or Ace Deuce 4 or something like that. You have three really low cards. And my draw, I know, isn't as good. You know, I'm drawing at a 7 or something like that. Well, now, we do the second draw. You bet into me. Now, I raise. And I raise even though I missed my draw. I didn't make a Badoogie. But I just know statistically that you were drawing at 10 cards and that therefore you were very unlikely to have improved to a Badoogie on that second draw. And what I'm doing is I'm saying, I hope he's going to believe me, because now if he missed his Badoogie, he's going to be going, oh, shoot, I have Ace Deuce 3, but Greg made his. He'll call my raise. He'll draw the third and final time. And if he misses, he'll check, and then he'll fold to my bet.
Right.
So we call that snowing.
Right.
Snowing means it's kind of like bluffing, only snowing also includes the further step that even though you don't have a made hand, you don't draw. You don't take an opportunity to improve your hand. And so that's snowing. It's bluffing and passing an opportunity to draw. And of course, when you pass that opportunity to draw, that kind of sells your hand. You know, that makes it a little more believable that you have it.
Yeah.
I mean, another huge play is, let's say you were pat from the beginning, and I've got position on you with a good three-card hand, a good one-card draw. So after the first draw or after the second draw, now you bet and I raise. Now, I'm not intending to stand pat and try to bluff you because I know you're already pat. But what I'm hoping I can do is not get you to fold. I'm hoping I can get you to break.
Yeah. Right,
I'm hoping that your pat Badoogie was something like, you know, 2-4-6 queen, and that you will decide, oh, you know, Greg raised me. He probably made his Badoogie, and I've got a really good draw. Now, if you have something like queen jack, you're just going to grit your teeth and call me down, or you're going to fold right now. It would be unreasonable for you to break your hand and draw two or three cards.
Right.
But if you have three low cards and one high card, now it can become quite correct for you to break your hand and draw, and I'll still draw behind you. I mean, when you draw one card on the second or the third draw, I will still take one card, and then you're going to go, dope. But the truth is, you know, I've turned my hand from one where I'm, you know, a significant dog with only one or two draws left against your pat hand, into a hand where I'm a significant favorite because I've got three cards that are lower than your three and we're both drawing.
Is there any automation in at all in this? I think the reason why I say that is I think back to Super System 2 in Daniel Negreanu's chapter, we're talking about when you're ahead in half position, it's almost an automatic bet as you're going through the draws. And also, I wanted to bring up, when you were talking about single draw, I watched you play around in 2007 at the World Series, a single draw, and there was a hand where you were out of position, but you were heads up with a guy, and you had a pat hand, and when the minute he said he was drawing, you like threw a bet out there and said, "Oh, you're drawing?" And I heard you say it, "Oh, you're drawing, then I bet," and you threw a bet out there, and the guy obviously didn't make his hand and folded. Is there any automation to Badoogie like that?
There is some automation. I mean, certainly if you're drawing fewer cards than your opponent, then it's pretty much automatic for you to bet.
Okay.
So if you're drawing one and I'm drawing two, then if you're first to act, you should pretty much always bet. I mean, not even pretty much, really always you should bet.
Okay.
And if I'm out of position and first to act, then I should just check blind and you should bet blind. So in that sense, it's like triple draw deuce to seven, which, you know, when you see that game played live, it always works like that. Whether it's two people, three people, four people in there, if one person draws fewer cards than everyone else, then everyone checks to him and that guy always bets. And they usually do it blind. Like, you know, you announce your draw and you push your cards forward.
Right.
As soon as the draws are announced, while the dealer is pitching those cards out to everybody, it's quite common for, like, check, check, the guy who's only drawing one bets, you know, and then the next person to act waits for their cards to make a decision. And Badoogie's the same way. But if you draw one and I draw one, then, of course, nothing's really automatic anymore.
Right.
You know, or if we both draw two, or if we're both pat, then it depends upon who that exactly this person is and how likely they are to bet if you check and all that kind of stuff.
Greg, we play Badoogie in our home game often, and it often gets compared to Raz in terms of the frustration level of it. Players keep drawing to improve their hand and not getting there or having to break. Is that a case of not focusing enough on the players and more focusing more on the cards, or is there just something inherent about the frustration in Badoogie?
Well, I think, you know, it is inherent. I mean, the thing about Raz is that you can start off ace, deuce, 3-4 and then end up with a totally junk hand at showdown. You know, when you're playing Hold'em and you start with the best possible hand, two aces, you always have top pair at showdown, no matter what else happens. I mean, you know, if there's four hearts and four to a straight on the board and you have black aces, then yeah, your hand sucks. But at least you always have top pair. But in the low ball games, no matter how good your first three or four cards are, you know, until you get the complete four or five card hand, you don't have anything.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can remember a time I'm playing a pot during a horse cash game. And my opponent thinks we're playing high. And he's raising me on 4th Street with King, Queen, Jack, 10. And I have, like, four cards to an 8. And then I catch, like, King, Pair, King.
Oh, no.
And end up with a King low, and he ends up with a Jack low. And he's like,
man.
Oh, he's, like, missed his straight on the river. He's all bummed. And then it's like, oh, the pot's getting pushed to him.
Oh,
now, do you obviously people play other games differently when it's shorthanded because hand values go up. And for the purposes of our tournament, this will only happen for a few individuals, but a lot of them will want to play this in their home game, and a lot of home games only have three or four people. How do you change it when your approach with Badoogie when you're playing shorthanded?
Yeah, you're certainly going to play a lot more two-card draws, especially when it's two reasonably low cards.
Okay.
You know, whereas, like, you know, if I'm at a full table of Badoogie, you know, we're eight-handed, if I have a hand like 3-4 under the gun, I'm never going to play it. You know, I'm just going to throw that away. Whereas if it folds to me on the button and I have 3-4, then I'm going to raise with it every time. In a home game, you know, now I might be playing 3-4 from every position. And in later position, I'll be playing, you know, even hands like 5-4. So you still want two cards that can make a good low hand. But you'll be playing more of them for any given position than you would have in a full table. And then the three-card draws don't have to be as good. Certainly you can start playing, you know, eights and possibly even nines. But if even in a shorthanded game, if you're playing those kind of one-card draws, you usually need them to be things like deuce 3-9. Because then you can, you know, improve your hand without making a Badoogie. So you have the black, you know, deuce of spades, three of clubs, and the nine of hearts.
Right.
Well, you need the diamond to make your hand, but what if you catch the ace of hearts? Well, now you keep the ace of hearts and throw away the nine, and you're drawing at a wheel.
Right.
So you want a hand that, you know, you can essentially counterfeit your suit and improve your hand without actually improving all the way to the Badoogie.
One of the more challenging things, I think, in this game is trying to figure out when to break your Badoogie. And we spoke a little bit earlier about when you're on the other side of it and trying to get somebody to break a Badoogie. Are there any tips that go beyond just the situation on when you decide to break a Badoogie?
Well, the big issue is who you're against. Especially if you're in a home game, you're going to know the players reasonably well after a while. And if you know that this guy just always has it, if he was drawing and now he's betting or raising and he has to have a Badoogie, well, then, of course, you need to break all of your weak Badoogies. And if you can't break them because they're multiple card weak, ace-deuce-three-queen is an easy break. Ace-four-jack-queen, now you're taking two cards and you've only got one or two draws left. So you should not be breaking that hand. You either need to grit your teeth and call down or you need to fold it. Because you're not getting the right price to draw two at this stage. If you're heads up, though, and you don't know the player, I'd just say grit your teeth and never break the hand. And I'd say that's especially going to be true if you come play the game with me on Poker Stars. There's just too many guys that are so aggressive that if I'm only against one person, then I'm just going to grit my teeth and call him down, and that's pretty much it. And if I'm not willing to grit my teeth and calm down, then I just don't break the hand. I just fold.
Okay.
Would you like to see this in the World Series as an event? I mean, they had Chinese poker 1 year. Is there a reason why it's not? Or 2 years. Is there a reason why it's not an event?
I think they just don't consider it popular enough. And, the World Series is getting bigger and bigger. And unfortunately, that means it's getting more and more corporate, in the sense that it's just, it's being looked at as a profit center. Not as a tournament per se. I mean, it's somewhat unfortunate. There is discussion going back, several years before Harrah's bought Binion's Horseshoe Casino downtown, that some, group of players like Doyle and Chip and so forth had been talking to Becky Binion about buying the World Series itself, not buying the casino from her, but just saying, hey, you're having money flow problems and stuff. How about if we give you a couple million dollars and we take the World Series trademarks?
Right.
And then we can either have it, pay you to host the event, or we'll have the right to go somewhere else to another casino. And I don't know how realistic that rumor was, if those were real discussions that were taking place that actually had a chance of happening. But, if we had someone like that, like Doyle and Chip, in charge of the World Series, then I think the players would be getting a better deal than they're getting right now on the costs. And they would be more inclined to just do what they think is best for the players and not worry if, instead of Badoogie, we could put in another 1500 no limit and make more money.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think they'd want to make money, of course, but if they were already making a ton of money, I don't think they would worry about completely maximizing the profit.
Right, yeah. Greg, our event coming up is a Badoogie tournament. Are there differences between Badoogie tournaments and Badoogie cash games?
A little, but not a lot. I mean, when you play limit tournaments, there's really not big differences. Or you would say the big differences are if your opponents are playing different. So if you go play a limit hold'em cash game in a given casino, and then you go play a limit hold'em tournament in the same casino, you're typically going to find that the people you're playing against are different types of players. Or even if it's the same guy, that he's now playing differently because he's in a tournament. And so you have to play different to take advantage of their differences. But inherently speaking, I mean, if I told everyone else it was a cash game, but I told you it's really a tournament, you shouldn't play any different. And then if I told all of them it's a tournament, and I told you it's really a cash game, again, you shouldn't play any different. The only reason you should play different is because you know what I told them.
Right.
Gotcha.
But if it's a cash game once and it's a tournament the next time, and I tell them it's a cash game both times, you should play the same. Whether it's really a cash game or really a tournament, because you're just, the only, and people don't seem to get that. I mean, the only difference is when you start getting close to the money or in the money. That's when you finally start playing differently because it's a tournament. But a lot of people show up at the beginning and they either seem to go to one extreme or another in a tournament. They either think like, oh, I need to play really tight and try to survive, or they think I need to try to play really loose and build up a stack. And I just don't really understand why people have these huge misconceptions about tournament poker.
You know, there's nothing really out there for as far as instructional literature on Badoogie. Have you ever thought about writing a Badoogie book, or do you think there's not really a big enough audience for it?
Well, there certainly isn't a big enough audience right now to justify the time. Plus, you know, I signed a contract with 2+2, you know, soon after I won the main event to write a tournament strategy book for them, and I still haven't done it. So it would kind of behoove me to finish that book that I've basically got almost nothing done on before I start new projects.
All right, Greg, we appreciate you being on the show, and we do have a segment that you probably remember from the last time on the show called Hand of the Week, and we do have a Badoogie hand this week, and we're hoping you'll be willing to stick around and help us pick apart this hand.
Well, I'll do my best.
All right, this comes from one of our longtime listeners who goes by the name Bit Guru, and this is an online game on PokerStars. It's a cash game, a quarter, 50 cents, and of course there's an eight seat max game. If we look at the chip stacks, the short stack has $5.40. Our hero here has $13.80, and the big chip stack is $15. And we have a couple folds, a call in the middle, and
let's talk about that real quick.
Okay.
If you're the first guy entering the pot in Badoogie or any of the draw games, you should always raise.
Awesome.
Always. Excellent. There's really no exception to that. I mean, I guess if you have someone who you know is kind of, you know, if you raise, he'll just call, but if you call, he'll always raise. Then you can three bet him. That might be the exception. But, I mean, you know, you can't know that guy's going to raise because, you know, what if he has a four-card draw? You know, you haven't seen him do anything yet, so you don't know that he's going to just automatically raise. If someone's such a lagtard that they're going to raise even if they don't have a hand, then yeah, you could limp and re-raise. But that exception is going to happen about once every 1,000 players you run into.
Yeah.
So always raise if you're the first one in the pot. So whether that was our hero or someone else, that was a mistake.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Greg, because actually the first person in the pot did raise. I missed that. So we do have a raise.
Okay, now, good.
What were we going to say, Chris?
Well, I was just wondering, Greg, that's a product of if you're going to enter the pot, you better be entering with a decent hand too, right? It's not just a snowing opportunity or anything like that. I mean, if you're going to come in the pot, you better be coming in with a good hand. And since you're coming in with a good hand, you better be raising. Is that what you're saying too? Or?
Well, not exactly. It's just essentially that's right. If your hand is good enough to play at all,
right,
then it's good enough to raise in this spot where no one else has come into the pot yet.
Okay.
If someone else has raised, then yes, there's lots of hands where it's correct to just call. So it's not raise or fold, no matter what. But the first person in the pot, you know, you still have fold equity. You know, if you raise, everyone might fold and give you the money right now.
Yeah.
All right.
So there's no reason to limp in and let that guy in the big blind draw three or four cards and accidentally make a huge hand.
Okay. Very true.
Yeah, very good.
All right, so I'll recap here. Our under-the-gun raises. We have one caller, and it folds around to our hero, who is in the small blind with seven of diamonds, deuce of clubs, tray of hearts, ten of clubs.
Now, so he has a deuce 3-7. So he has a deuce 3-7 draw.
Right. In the worst position.
Well, see, I would like that hand a lot more, you know, if it was better than a seven. But again, this is the thing I mentioned before. He can reduce this hand. He can catch a card that's suited to the 7, the ace, the 4, the 5, the 6, and he'll improve the hand even if he does not, you know, make the Badoogie on that draw. So, in fact, he can't make a Badoogie on that draw and reduce at the same time. But I would say the call is marginal if he calls the raise. It's not horrible, but you know, it's really close to 50-50 whether it's correct or not. It partially depends upon how tight the raiser is, you know, how likely he is to have a pat hand. And actually, you don't even want him to have – you want him to have a pat hand rather than a good one-card draw. If you have deuce 3-7, if he has a pat hand, then the fact that you're drawn to a 7 is kind of irrelevant because that'll almost always be good.
Yeah.
But if he has – you know, if he instead is more likely to have ace, deuce, 3, ace, deuce, 4, 2, 3, 5, all that kind of stuff, you know, now you still need to improve to beat him, but you need to improve while he doesn't also improve.
Okay.
So you're actually a bigger, you're less of a dog against the guy who has a pat jack made than you are against the guy with a better one card draw.
All right. Well, our hero does call, and the big blind calls as well, too. So we have three players going to the first draw, and our hero discards the 10, of course. And the big blind discards one card, and the initial raiser stands pat.
Okay. I thought there was another person in there who called.
You said there was one more person, right?
I'm sorry. And that person discards one as well.
Okay, so we got 1-1, pat 1.
Right.
Well, then you're going to check blind. I mean, it's online. You're not going to be blind. You'll have seen your card, but you're going to check no matter what, because you expect the pat hand to bet no matter what.
Right.
So if you missed, you're only going to want to call. You're not going to want to check raise. And if you made your hand, well, now he'll bet. The other person will probably not fold, and then you can check raise and get more money in.
What do we get?
We got the three of diamonds, so we paired up. And it's really not a good card for us at all, I don't think.
Well, it's no worse than getting, you know, it's no worse than any other. I mean, if you're going to catch a card that doesn't make your hand, you might as well pair a small card, because that might be taking away a card that someone else can use.
Yeah.
So that's better than the king of diamonds. Or I forget which suit we're looking for, to be honest. But
spade.
Spade.
We're looking for a spade. Okay, yeah. Well, then the three of diamonds that pairs you is better than the king of diamonds, just because, you know, if someone needs a diamond, you'd rather they catch the king than the three. It's not much better. It's some tiny fractional amount that isn't worth thinking about, really, but still, it's slightly better. It's kind of like when induced to seven. If you're going to miss, you want to pair your cards you've already got.
Right.
So that it becomes harder and harder for your opponent to catch a card of that rank. Same concept, but it's less powerful in Badoogie than it is in deuce to seven, because you don't know that the opponent needs a three of diamonds. None of them might need a three of diamonds.
Okay, good. All right, our hero checks, the big blind checks, the initial raiser bets out, the player in between us calls as well, too, and it comes back to us. Is this a hand that we get rid of now?
No, it isn't, because you're getting too good of a price, and you're against the pat hand. So in other words, you know, I would be more concerned if everyone had drawn a card and then one of those other guys had bet.
Yeah.
Because now there would be a small chance that we're drawing dead. I mean, a seven is almost never drawing dead. But still, there'd be a small chance that we're drawing dead. Whereas now, there's very, very little chance that we're drawing dead. So, you know, there's eight bets pre-flop, and there's two more bets in there now. We're getting 10-1 on the call, so it's a very easy call with a hand that we know is probably drawing to at least the ace, the four, the five, the six, and probably still the eight, the nine, you know, maybe the 10, maybe the jack, you know, maybe even the queen. So we got way too many outs at a 10-1 price to throw it away.
Okay. And our hero does call, and so does the big blind, so everybody remains for the second draw. We discard the three of diamonds. The other two players discard one, and of course the player who is stand pat remains standing pat.
Yep.
And we pick up the nine of diamonds with our draw.
Man.
So still nothing. Again, we're going to check even whether we made the hand or not. Because, again, the pat hand ought to bet. And you'll see people make this mistake where it's like, oh, you know, if they have a weak Badoogie, they'll check. Because they're like, you know what, someone's going to check raise me here if they made their hand. And they're all going to call me anyways. So I'm just going to save a bet for the times I'm beat. And so you'll see a pat hand occasionally check in this spot, but they shouldn't. You know, now that there's three guys drawing one card each, they're going to win this pot, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of half the time against all three of them put together. Because three guys drawing one is about the same thing as one guy drawing one card three times, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you were about 50-50 against a single opponent who started with a one card draw, then you're still about 50-50 against three guys drawing one card once. And you're getting paid 3-1 on the money.
Wow.
So you definitely need to bet here. If you're pat, you know, and they all drew, you need to bet. It's true, one of them might be check raising. but you know, you still need to bet here so that you're charging them because you're such a huge favorite, you know, on the money when they are all still drawing.
Excellent. Well, of course, we check, the big blind checks, the pat hand bets out. It's just called in between to us and comes back to us. And we're willing to take one more card here, right?
Well, now you're getting 8-1. You know, before we were getting 10-1 because there were 8 small bets on the first round, and then you had the pat hand bet, and he got one call. So that was, you were getting 10-1, and you knew the guy behind you was either going to call or raise. So, you know, I would say that kind of evens out. You know, you could think of it as getting 11-1, but he might raise and force you to put more money in. Mm-hmm. So you were getting 10-1, and you had 2 draws left. And that also meant that if you made it on the second draw, you had the 2 big betting rounds with which to get extra money in the pot.
Okay.
So the odds, the pot odds after the first draw, plus the implied odds were really huge. You know, you were getting 16-1, 20-1, something like that between the pot odds and the implied odds put together. But now we each put in 1 big bet on the first round. You know, we had 8 small bets total, and then we had 4 small bets on the second round. That's 12 small bets, which will reduce to 6 big bets. And there's 2 more big bets. So we're getting 8-1, which doesn't seem a lot worse than the 10-1. Except now the implied odds for the situation have dropped dramatically because there's only 1 round of betting left. So this is actually a spot where, you know, the call is not automatic. And certainly if we were against an opponent who had drawn 1 card originally and then stood pat, I'd be pretty inclined to fold right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But since we know that, again, we have the ace, 4, 5, 6, the 8, and the 9 that are probably all good, and that even some of the higher cards, the 10, jack, queen, and even the king have some chance of being good if we hit, we're still going to call here. But it's not like it was on the first round of betting. On the second round of betting, the call was 100% obvious. Now it's not so clear. And if there's any reason to think that this guy's really strong, like let's say he is someone who tends to check on that round of betting if he has a weak badoogie, you know, a king or a queen or whatever. If he's someone who tends to do that, then folding here might be correct because now you know he has a strong or medium badoogie made.
Okay, but
calling's fine. I mean, all right. Put together, calling's fine, but I wanted the people to know that it wasn't like slam dunk obvious.
Okay. It wasn't automatic. Very good. All right, well, our hero does call. The big blind calls as well, too, so everybody remains for the third and final draw. And everybody discards 1 except the pat hand. And we pick up the ace of spades.
Perfect card.
Yeah.
It is, and we are first to act. So do we bet out here, or do we...
We absolutely bet out.
Okay.
100%. Because on every other round of betting, it was pretty much automatic for the pat hand to bet once we checked to him. Because not only does he probably have the best hand, but he needs to charge us so that we don't draw for free. But now, he doesn't expect us to call unless we made a badoogie. So if you check to him now, he's not going to bet the king badoogie and the queen badoogie and the jack badoogie and all that stuff. He's only going to bet if he happens to have been dealt a really strong pat hand. So you need to bet and then put him to the decision. Are you bluffing? Are you not? And since he's going to be getting such a huge price, since he's going to be getting 11-1 or 12-1, he's going to call you just because there's got to be at least that much chance that you're bluffing. I mean, I would always call you. If I hadn't been snowing, if I actually had the badoogie, I would always call you on the river. And I would never be snowing in this spot against 3 people.
Right.
So that means you're going to bet, and I'm either going to call, or if I was lucky enough to get dealt originally a really strong pat badoogie, then I'll raise you. But I'm never going to fold. And now if the guy in between raises, then I can fold lots of my hands. In fact, okay. If the guy in between even calls, I can fold my kings and my queens and my jacks. But this is definitely 100% correct to bet out here.
Okay.
All right, our hero does bet out. The big blind, Hal, raises. The original Pat hand calls. The other player in their hand gets out of the way, and it gets back to us. Do we call or raise here, Greg?
Well, that is the right question. Folding is not ever going to be correct unless that guy who raised us is, again, the biggest rock in the world. It's never going to be correct to fold because we're getting a massive price. You know, the interesting thing here, too, is that, you know, my first thought when you said, you know, this guy in between raises is that we should just call. But the Pat hand called. So it's kind of like if we three bet correctly, you know, the Pat hand is, you know, we're going to get called by the other guy who made his hand just now.
Right.
And the Pat hand, you know, is probably going to have to call one more bet, even though he knows he's beat, just because he just doesn't want to give it up after he's put that much money in. So the fact that we're going to probably get paid off by two people when we correctly three bet makes me think that we should three bet here. In other words, I think it's actually slightly less than 50% that we have the best hand right now. But we're getting paid 2-1.
Yeah.
On the three bet. Of course, we might get four bet if the guy made a really, really strong hand.
Right.
But a lot of people there would raise us with just any seven. And maybe, you know, I don't know who this guy is. You're in a low limit game too. He might just like, oh, I made my eight, my nine, my 10. And he might be raising with that. There's even a small chance that he's bluffing because he's hoping you're bluffing. He's like, ooh, you know, if he's bluffing, I can raise. And then the guy behind me who's been pat the whole time with a bet and a raise, he'll have to give up, you know, his badoogie unless he has something really good. So then every time that you're bluffing, he wins the pot basically. Because then, of course, you'll fold when it gets back to you.
Right. Wow.
So he might be trying to leverage your bet. Even if he thinks you've made the hand, if he thinks you've made something weak or that there's any chance you're bluffing, he's putting in two big bets, but he's trying to win a pot that has, you know, 13 big bets at that point. So he doesn't have to be right, you know, very often for it to work out. And then some people are just so aggressive, they don't care if it's wrong, they just do it anyway. So, you know, I mean, I add up all these possibilities, and it's just like, you know what, I think three betting is correct, but it's not correct by a huge amount.
Okay, so you could live with either a call or a raise here then?
Absolutely, I could live with either one. And the difference would be what I know about these other players.
Gotcha. All right, well, our hero does call. The original Pat hand mucks 10 of diamonds, 8 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 5 of spades, which is probably consistent with what we said. He had a made badoogie from the beginning. And our remaining opponent showed 8 of spades, 7 of hearts, deuce of diamonds, ace of clubs, and we win this pot.
Yeah, that was 8-7 is a pretty thin raise there, but, you know, not a horrible raise on his part. But the problem is, it's like, you know, if we really have a much worse badoogie, then, you know, he's going to get a crying call. And if we have a better badoogie, he's usually going to get raised. I mean, we had just a weak enough better badoogie to just call him instead of raise him. But that's why I guess I'm glad at least. I was leaning towards the three bet.
Yeah.
But it's only because the other guy was in there. If he hadn't still been in there, then I would have leaned towards the call.
Hmm. Wow.
Very interesting.
Well, when you know sometimes you raise with the worst hand just because you want to charge the third guy who you know is way, way behind.
Yeah.
You know, so I've done that, especially in deuce to seven triple draw. I do those kinds of things a lot where, you know, I've got some loosey-goosey opponent who just won't give up a hand. And, you know, I'm in position with a good one-card draw. And I know there's a good chance that the guy who's betting into me has a pat hand. But it's like, you know what? I'm not far behind his pat hand. We got two more draws. So when the loose guy calls, I'm going to raise. And if he three bets, well, great. I'll get rid of that guy in between and his money will be dead. And again, I'm not that far behind, so it's not horrible that I'm putting in three bets. And if he doesn't raise, you know, maybe I'll even do things like get him to break, you know, I mean, if I have a draw to a wheel, you know, like deuce, three, four, seven, and this guy has like a nine made, like a 9-8, if he breaks it, I'm actually better off with him drawing one to an eight than and me drawing one to a wheel than if he has a pat nine against my wheel draw.
Right.
So there's all kinds of good things that can happen. Plus, I can always end up just charging the guy in the middle, and now I'm nowhere near a 2-1 dog against that other guy's pat hand. So I'm making more money, you know, playing a big pot three-way than I am playing a small pot heads-up.
All right. Well, Greg, we appreciate you being on the show and breaking down this hand. And BitGuru, thank you for sending your hand in. And we will be happy to send you a setup of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up Magazine. And everyone else, send your hands to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we'll break them down and hopefully have more good analysis from folks like Greg Raymer in the future.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, guys.
Man, it's always awesome to have him on the show. I mean, he's just so smart, so calm, and he knows so much, especially about Badoogie.
Oh, absolutely. Just a fountain of knowledge and, the things that you think are going around in his head when you talk to him, you can just tell how smart he is.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. And it's like, it's just all calculating, and it's just incredible. When he's talking about how many bets are in the pot, I'm still trying to figure out what cards we have. And he's like, yeah, there's a dozen big blinds. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, that's incredible. And, I'm telling you, I'm reading this Doyle Brunson autobiography right now, and he talks about how he met up with this guy who wrote it for him, and he just – I tell you what, if Greg Raymer wants to write that 2+2 book and he needs somebody to help write it, I'm there for him, man, because he's always there for us. So. But really, thanks to Greg Raymer for being on the show, and look forward to talking to the Indie Up Nation next week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.